Welcome to the Clappers.
It is already
2019.
What a great year I'm having. What about you?
It's fantastical. Tell me this. How was Christmas for you?
Christmas was great. It was lovely. There was no blood on the floor.
No.
None at all.
I had a good Christmas and it's a favourite time of year for me.
Mm.
I built some shelves.
Really?
I built them.
Really?
I've been threatening
to
do this.
Actually chop down a tree.
No.
Hoed some wood.
No,
IKEA?
No. I bought the timber from a timber mill. Yeah. Well, no, a timber yard that comes from the timber mill.
Right.
And I used that timber to build
some shelves. So you didn't buy lumber.
Shelves.
You didn't buy lumber.
No,
you
bought
timber.
And I've had a pile of books about the size of this studio sitting in the middle of
They're very big books. They're as big as the studio.
Sitting in the middle of the floor for about a year. Just looking at me, saying, "What are you doing, man? Build me a shelf."
The books have eyes.
They do. Yeah. And I never did. And I thought, oh, I'll just buy some. It's all right. But everything shuts. And if you want anything made out of actual timber, not MDF,
not chipboard,
there's not a lot of places to go that will give you much change a few thousand
beach veneer
bucks.
Foil wrap.
No. I want the timber that is timber. And I reckon I saved 60% of what it would have cost me to buy these and have them sent to my abode unpainted.
Mm.
Whereas buying the timber, making them myself, getting another person in the household to do the painting, because my painting is not considered very good painting when it comes to shelves. Very satisfactory.
It's been a big year in film.
Has it? Has it been bigger than last year?
No, I reckon it's been about exactly the same
size. Yeah, I think so too. I think it was the same size.
Roughly the same as the same size as the year before that as well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's with a bunch of my colleagues at work at The Age.
We might as well say it.
We might as well say it.
The Age.
We're not on the ABC. We're actually
You can actually say that you work at The Age.
I work at The Age, and The Age is, you know, very closely aligned with the Sydney Morning Herald, so my colleagues are there, blah, blah, blah. I've got some in London and wherever. So
The National Times.
Annually, we do the sort of the National Times. My God, there's a blast from the past.
I love that paper.
I used to have a column that I wrote regularly for the National Times.
Did you?
It became a digital only thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No.
And all of those columns have disappeared now because the digital existence has ended. And so there's probably like 100 columns that I wrote that have they've gone. Disappeared. No trace. Anyway, which brings us to my film of the year. But we'll get there in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
So we do this thing annually where we basically all pick or nominate our 10 best films of the year, right?
Yep.
This is an exercise in compromise and frustration and leaving nobody happy.
No, really, nobody wins.
It's a really
nobody wins. I think it's a great
exercise.
Way. It's a great way to celebrate the year.
It's kind of like being in politics. It's really
we got together and we came across something that nobody likes and everybody agrees with.
That's right. So we all make a list of 10 films, and there are 7 of us contributing to this.
Mm.
Those 10 films, like your number one film gets 10 points, your number 10 film gets 1 point, right? Out of that, you end up
maths.
What's maths got to do with being a film
carpentry,
critic?
Carpentry, maths. You're never going to escape it, are you? No matter where we are, no matter what we talk about, maths.
So we apply a Pythagorean theorem to this, and we don't know this.
Oh,
no. I think we get out the calculator. Maybe even like old-fashioned pen and paper. Anyway, you end up with a top 10 that reflects almost without fail nobody's actual choice.
Yep.
Which is the genius of it, the sheer genius of it. So I find it a really interesting
So the fourth
exercise.
Best, the film that most people have put around 4, 5, or 6 could very well end up being number one because only everybody else is number one, no one else put.
That's exactly right.
So you'll get some average.
You'll get some outliers.
The kind of mediocre film
that everybody else hates, right? And that's their number one film of the year, right?
Yeah.
And then, their fourth or fifth film is garnering, 5 or 6 points. And that happens for 5 people.
So it'd be suddenly, so you're going to tell me Crazy Rich Asians was the number one of the list?
No. Shall I run through?
Well, why not? We're here.
I want to do it in reverse order.
Okay.
Because a little bit of drum roll. Can you do a drum roll?
I can do a drum roll, but I usually do it with drums.
Okay. All right. So that's quite good.
Thanks.
That's quite good. Probably through the levels, through the roof. I think Courtney's ears are bleeding now, but that's okay. A little bit of action in the studio.
But his colourful console remains unmolested.
Okay, so number 10. At number 10, we have a film which is going to be this actor's last ever until the next one he does.
Okay.
Oh, come on.
No.
All right. Fashion.
Fashion.
Kinkiness.
I don't know. I don't
Phantom
know.
Phantom Thread, man.
Oh, Daniel Day-Lewis, his last film before it. Yep, of course. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So,
you know, this is your daily life where yeah, I go no, I go and see a film like once every 6 months. Yeah. So yeah, I'm a little slower
I'll
than
I'll
you.
I'll try and make the clues a bit more obvious. Like, yeah, thank I'll actually you. Say the name of the actor or maybe even the name of the film.
So, number 10 is Phantom Thread. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. And now,
that was according to you and according to my assessment of it using my radar, that seemed like an okay film.
That's a good film.
Yeah.
It's a really good film.
What precisely is the nature of my game?
All your rules and your clothes and all this money and everything is a game.
This was an ambush.
Stop.
Are you sent here to ruin my evening and possibly my entire life?
Stop it!
Terrific soundtrack as well. Mm-hmm. Johnny Greenwood does that. And very kinky film, Paul Thomas Anderson. It's just, you know, it's like, it's a great, considered, beautifully constructed piece of work. Slightly out there, very, very slow.
Mm. That always wins points with me.
Well, you'd love it then.
Slowness. It. Yeah. Slowness.
In one of those films that actually, I think I saw probably in November or December of last year.
Yeah.
Right. But it didn't get released until very early this year. So it just sort of creeps in.
Right.
And that's, yeah. So, but number 10, number 9, film that we talked about on this podcast, an Israeli film. Are you with me yet?
Yeah. I can't remember what it was called. It was about the tank, wasn't it? Yeah.
Sort of. No, the tank.
Was the guys in the tank? No. Oh, it was a different Israeli film.
Same director.
Same director.
But that was his previous film,
okay,
which is called Lebanon. This film is called Foxtrot.
Can Foxtrot. Kvish Sterili. Nechozel. Kvish Sterili Avo.
Taim Bekol Makom. Tetspetim Alenu.
It's a sort of three-act structure. It begins with the parents of an Israeli soldier being told by the military that their son has been killed in action. Yep. And then
we go back. Then we go, so he's on the border.
Really, really
fantastic film. It sounded great.
Yeah, one well worth catching. And really, the reason I'm running through these is because...
Just to remind people, you can catch up with them.
Hunt for some of these films.
On your streamings, perhaps.
On your streamings. And some of them are actually in the cinema.
There's one film that you said is going to... Be careful, it's going to be gone. And it's still there. It was one... Anyway, you'll mention
that'll
it.
That'll be on my list.
Yeah.
Okay, so number 8.
Yep.
This is a Japanese film. I think you saw this.
Shoplifters.
Shoplifters.
Yeah.
You're a big rap for that film?
Oh, I'm a big rap for that director. I just, you know, like I said, it's a very a strong similarity. Ozu's domestical dramas that were so warm and tender, but also cruel and nasty at the same time at points. Just, it's lovely that someone's doing original work, but also clearly influenced by one of the masters of Japanese cinema.
Yeah.
Just fantastic to see that made it all the way to number 7.
Yeah.
Well, it has subtitles. I know a lot of Australians are... you know, a little chary of subtitles.
Well, look, I mean, in fairness, the people who have made this list, okay, are people
eggheads.
Who spend a leg.
Nerds.
Basically
wankers. A bunch of wankers is what they are. Don't you know who I am?
Do you know who I am?
My name should be there, right there, right there on the list. Turn the page. There I am.
Yes. Anyway, number 6. Mm-hmm. We have 2 films at number 6.
Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Couldn't split them.
So that means that do we go straight to number 4?
We do.
Good. Okay, yeah. That's all right.
Are you okay
then.
With that?
Yeah, no, if we go straight to number 4, then we can have 2 at number 6. That's fine.
Thank goodness for that. Number 6 is a film that is just lobbed in the cinema.
Okay.
And this is a film that we'll talk about separately later on.
Another time.
Your favourite.
I hoped I might be employed here by you as something.
A monster for the children to play with, perhaps.
It is important to make new friends in court, is it not?
You're so beautiful.
Stop it, you mock me.
If I were a man, I would ravish you.
You have become close to Abigail.
She is a viper. You're jealous.
You must send Abigail away.
I do not want to.
Let's shoot something.
I've seen 15 seconds of the trailer of this. I won't see any more because it looks so magnificent and excitement. I just can't. I'm just beside myself with glee. I can't wait to see it. I love Olivia Colman. I don't mind Jennifer Lawrence, and there's another woman in it too.
I don't know what that's got to do with it. She's not in it.
Isn't she in it?
No.
Who are the women in this film?
Emma Stone and Rachel Weisz.
I get them mixed up. Yeah, they're all good. And it looks great and nasty, full of nastiness.
Directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, the Greek director
who we know
for Killing the Sacred Deer and The Lobster. And Dogtooth, and this is probably, in some ways, I'd say it's his most accessible film.
Yeah, quite mainstream.
But it's a costume drama that is unlike pretty much any costume drama you've ever seen. It is filthy, it is funny, it is twisted, it is just so much fun.
Mm.
And the other film at number six is Black Klansman, Spike Lee's film.
Which has fun. There is fun.
It's a film that manages to have a foot in two very distinct camps. I think it is very, very fun and it is very, very serious.
Mm.
The KKK is planning an attack.
How do you propose to make this investigation?
We'll establish contact over the phone.
We'll need a white officer to play me when they meet face to face.
You for the white race, Ron?
Oh, hell yeah.
So there becomes a combined Ron Stallworth.
Can you do that?
With the right white man, we can do anything.
Casting's great, isn't it?
Denzel Washington's son plays the lead, and I was in two minds until the very, till that coda, last 5-10 minutes where it sort of made the leap into the present day, and I was like, okay. All my reservations are blown away.
Yeah, because you think it's a bit of a – let's not say anything too much, but you think it's a bit of a fantasy and a bit of a gilding.
I thought it was a bit didactic is really the main thing. Right, I thought, here's Spike putting into the mouths of people in the mid-1970s the phrases that we hear bandied around by the Trump kind of crowd now.
Mm.
As I, aren't we doing a bit of retro tooling here?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, no.
No.
That's the really kind of like distressing and shocking thing about it. There's a through line from the Confederacy to the present day.
Right to now. And every film you've said so far, I think I remember them. They're all good films so far. Haven't heard any duds. I'm waiting for the duds, man. I guess as we get to the top of the list, that's where the duds reveal themselves, aren't they?
See? Let's not be so down. Number five, Leave No Trace.
Can you tell me where you live? In the park?
There's 435 questions. Respond true or false to each question.
Who taught you how to read?
My dad teaches me.
You're actually quite a bit ahead of where you need to be.
What was that film?
Oh, come on.
I don't know.
Come on.
I don't. I think
Ben
about
Foster
other things.
And Thomas and Mackenzie as a father and daughter living in the wilds outside Portland, Oregon. Did you see it or did you not see it?
No.
Right, okay. Now, Jennifer Lawrence has some relevance to that one.
Because of the
Not because she's in it,
Winter's
but because
Bone.
She was in Winter's Bone. That's right, yes.
Which I loved.
Also directed by Deborah Granick.
Which I loved,
This is a film that you're going to struggle to find, but I heartily recommend
if
you
it,
try.
It doesn't have Jennifer Lawrence in it, so you will struggle to find anything that doesn't have Jennifer Lawrence. Well, she should be in more films so people can find them.
No, you can't find Winter's Bone.
Oh, can't you?
Winter's Bone is so hard to find.
Maybe because she wants to control that. This is a thing that whether it's music that artists control or film or whatever you have the moral authority to assert your ownership over, sometimes the only way to get it out there is to give up that ownership and to allow somebody to kind of take control of it or lease it. And some people don't want to. They say, this is mine and I don't like the deal you're offering me to get it out there to the people. And
so are you suggesting that Jennifer Lawrence is blocking it?
No. I was suggesting that maybe the director, what was the director's name
Deborah
again?
Branning.
She's not happy with the distribution deals she's being offered.
I would suspect that it's got more to do with the fact that she makes very, very beautifully constructed, very small scale in terms of their likely audience kind of films that are, they're in a space that is thoroughly not commercial. And I think that probably they're not super attractive as a business proposition. So
what's the director?
There's distributors who simply aren't interested in releasing
name. What's the director who made Wendy and Lucy and Meek's Crossing?
Kelly Reichardt.
Yeah, yeah. Kelly Reichardt.
Yeah.
Her films, are they easier to find or are they difficult? She's made a few films and they're all wonderful. I saw one at the film festival, which is three-part film,
and you'll see them at Acme, and that's. I don't know if you can find, say, Meek's Cut Off. I think you might be able to find Meek's Cut Off somewhere, which is a tremendous film.
As is Wendy and Lucy. Yeah. As is the one that name escapes me that I saw a couple of years ago. Yeah. With it was like a three films within the one film type film.
Yeah, look, I'm not sure. Could look into that at a later date.
Yeah, it's important to not just see the films that are being offered to you, to maybe put a bit of effort in and try, like the ones that are there on the screen, to try and find the ones that sound good. Okay, what are we up
to?
Number four.
You were never really here.
State Senator Albert Vatto. His teenage daughter's missing.
What's the lead?
He got an anonymous text with an address.
I've heard of these places. They said you were brutal.
Can be.
I want you to hurt them.
I was a little bit surprised to see that it had quite broad support, because this is a very, very challenging film with Joaquin Phoenix as a hitman who goes out and rescues teenage girls who have been abducted and into sex slavery in New York. It's a slightly mad film, I think, in many ways. Directed by Lynn Ramsey, who's probably best known for We Need to Talk About Kevin. Really interesting in that it's such a kind of masculine, violent, brooding kind of piece of work made by a woman, right? And her films exist in that kind of space. I don't know that you'd necessarily say that they bring a particularly female perspective to the territory. I don't know. I'm a bit undecided.
Do Catherine Bigelow's films bring a particularly female perspective to the territory? No. So that's okay.
She's a really interesting filmmaker.
That's not her.
And this is, again, a Johnny Greenwood score, and probably the most memorable score of the year. It just unsettled me from the very beginning and did not stop unsettling me until the very end.
That's good.
And, yeah, it was really powerful. And I think I enjoyed this film a lot, and then I stepped away and went, hang on, it's a bit sort of unreal in some respects. It's in this kind of weird space that you kind of go, well, that's all a bit unrealistic. And then you could sort of process it a bit and go, maybe it makes sense because so much of it is quite possibly happening in his head. You know, there's this kind of, the title kind of alludes to that, I think, in some ways. Anyway, it's a really interesting piece of work. I think it's the sort of thing that a lot of people saw and hated and a lot of people saw and loved. So I'm surprised that it got broad enough support to make it to this list, but it did.
But the list, the people, they're not broad people. Like I said, they're nudniks, mate. Seven nudniks got together and came up with a list. Like,
number three.
Really, broad support.
Number three.
My God.
This is one that had broad support out there in the world.
Okay.
Three billboards outside of Missouri.
So, Mildred Hayes, why did you put up these billboards?
My daughter Angela was murdered 7 months ago. It seems to me the police department is too busy torturing black folks to solve actual crime.
The hell is this?
Dixon, I'm in the middle of my goddamn Easter dinner. Sorry, kids.
I know, Chief, but I think we got kind of a problem.
Finally, a film I've seen. I enjoy all Martin McDonagh's films. They're funny and violent and nasty. Calvary, Seven Psychopaths, In Bruges, The Guard. The Guard, I must have seen about four times. I just can't get enough of that film. It's Don Cheadle and Brendan Gleeson, who seems to be, I think, in all of his films. Wonderful stuff, and the character that Frances McDormand plays reminded me so much of the one she played in that Netflix three-part thing with Richard Jenkins. Name escapes me. Great. Just great, and not an easy film to watch, and no easy solutions or resolutions, because there aren't any when something like this happens. And great film. Made it to number three.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see what number two was. Aquaman. I know that isn't out yet.
Would have qualified.
Marvel.
It was eligible for consideration on the Aquaman front. I was professionally obliged to write a couple of stories about Aquaman.
A couple. Why would anyone want more than one?
Behave. Anyway, my wife called me yesterday to say, guess where I'm going? I said, where? She said, I'm going to the movies. She never goes to the movies.
Mm-hmm.
Like I drag her along.
I can't blame her. I can't blame her.
I drag her along once in a blue moon. Okay? Anyway, she goes, I go to the movies with the girls, our daughters, and to see what? She said, Aquaman. I said, what? Why are you going to see Aquaman? You're going to hate it.
Mm.
And she was like, oh, you know, you made it sound interesting. And it was like,
shame on you.
Shame on me.
Shame on you.
I did actually feel shame on me.
Sleazy corporate.
Anyway, about an hour later yeah. She called me again to say, I've left.
An hour? So, yeah. And
she left halfway through. Yeah. She couldn't hold her breath any longer.
No. That was excellent. Excellent.
Okay, number two.
It's not Aquaman.
It's not Aquaman. Good. No. Sorry to disappoint. Mm. Sweet Country.
Harry March is dead. That black fella Sam killed him. You see it?
No.
Sorry, sir. There's been a shooting.
We gonna catch this murder?
Yes, boss.
When?
Real soon, boss.
Warwick Thornton's
Australian
Western about
that was on for like 2 weeks.
It
seemed like 2 weeks. Yeah. I felt like I didn't get a chance to see that, and it's not my fault because I like his stuff and I wanted to see it.
Outback Western, set in the 1920s, supposedly based on a true story, I think fairly loosely so. An Aboriginal man kills a white man in self-defense, is then accused of murder and... But he flees, and so it's basically a hunt movie. It's a chase movie. It's kind of like The Searchers. It's kind of like The Tracker.
Yep.
It's I think it's a magnificent film, absolutely wonderful film, and it had a lot of love. And Hamilton Morris, the guy who plays the Indigenous character who's on the run, won the Best Actor at the Actor Awards recently, which was really quite amazing.
What are those awards called again?
The Actor Awards.
Why?
Because, darling, they're given to actors.
What is wrong with those people? Like, Jesus.
You know,
do they still have AFI awards?
The AFI awards they still have the them? Actor awards.
Why? AFI is really easy. Australian, because it's Australia. Film, because they're in Films Institute.
Yeah.
Like, why? Can't you talk to them?
Because
can't you and your six mates get together and form a cabal?
Do you know why why they changed the name? Like, seriously, do you know why they changed the name?
No.
Okay. All right. No, nor do I. No.
Excellent.
No, I do.
Yeah, speedboats.
They basically, I mean, and I'm going to sort of cite some of the gibberish that they spout
do.
All the time.
Yeah, right? People need to hear this gibberish.
They wanted to make the awards part of the annual international awards conversation. So they basically...
What's this? That doesn't mean anything.
Of course it means something. What it means is from about November / December every year, you get the heat building around the Oscars.
That doesn't explain the acronym or the name.
I'm getting there.
Very slow.
I'm getting there. You change the name of the AFI Awards. A great brand name. You may think it's great. It did not have particular resonance with the general public, right? It did not have great marketing value in terms of how you sell this to TV networks.
I will accept that. I will accept that.
Now it's the Academy, right? They are the Australian Academy Awards. They are the Australian Academy of Cinema and Television Arts. That's what ACTA stands for, right? So they can legitimately now say the Australian Academy Awards.
That is so bogus.
Well, it may be bogus.
What it is sophistry, and I'm not falling for it. And I would say anybody with an education that goes past year 9 is not falling for it either.
Well, having left in grade 8, I found it very convincing.
Hoovered it up. I sucked it down.
Yeah, sounds good to me. Good to me. Anyway,
where's my ticket?
That's the logic of it.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, right. So, Hamilton Morris.
Hamilton Morris.
The lead in Sweet Country.
Yep.
Well, he's sort of the lead. I mean, he's the central character, let's say.
Yeah.
It's got Brian Brown in it. It's got Sam Neill in it. It's got Ewan Leslie plays the white settler, racist, drunk settler who is killed. He's only in it for like 10 minutes.
Mm.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. I love guys like that who you see him for a second and you wish they'd come back.
Yeah. Well, no.
Yeah, wish he'd come
not
back.
Not his character. Anyway, Sweet Country is fantastic.
Number two. Absolutely. Sweet Country is number two?
Number two, yeah.
Number one.
Number one, and I have to confess, I've not seen this film. Okay. So it didn't get any votes from me.
How about that for a confession?
Didn't get any votes from me.
The man who sees 7 films a day has not seen this film. Gee, it must be a really bad film, Carl. Must be rubbish, this film.
Must it?
If you haven't seen it.
No, I just haven't got around to it yet.
Mm.
Roma.
Yeah. Yeah, that's got the big buzz, isn't it, right now?
It's got a lot of buzz. A lot of buzz.
It beat out your favourite at Cannes.
My favourite.
Was it the favourite? Or was it Venice? No, Venice. It beat out the favourite at Venice.
Yeah. So Roma is
understandably
directed by Alfonso Cuarón. It's
looks like a Pasolini film, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's set in Mexico City, and I think probably the 70s, 80s.
I was thinking the 80s, but I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not sure. I haven't done any research into it. I've just seen a bit of the clip, and I thought,
it's effectively a story of his family, but really the main character is the housekeeper. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it yet. I will see it. I think pretty soon.
Seems only recent.
It's on Netflix. It's sitting there right now.
Yeah.
Now this is a movie that's going to be. It's going to be really interesting to watch over the next couple of months because I think the heat is building very, very strongly for this to be in contention for the Oscars. But is it legitimately going to be allowed to be? It did get a very brief cinema release.
Why do you mean?
Well, because it's not a film
The people need to know what you're talking about.
Okay. Yeah. So basically, to qualify for the Oscars, a film needs to have been released in cinemas. Any time between January 1 and December 31 for 7 consecutive days.
Okay.
At a regular session.
Of 2018.
This
year, where we are still, listeners, we are still
now,
in 2018.
Roma will qualify on that basis.
Yep.
Right. But it is a film that was commissioned by Netflix, right? This is a genuine Netflix original, unlike some of the films that creep into there. And it's
see where you're
it's
going
problematic
here.
for the basically the Academy, which represents it doesn't represent the studios per se, but the studios are a very important part of the Academy and mm-hmm. what it's about, and the awards were created and continue to work effectively as a marketing mechanism for the business of movies,
for the studios, not for pay-per-view, not for streaming, not for cable, but for people to actually go and sit down, buy this stuff.
There have been a couple of flashpoints over the last couple of years, including Okja Okja. I think it's Okja.
Is that a film? I don't know.
Yeah. That was at Cannes last year, I think it was. And there have been a couple of moments where.
What's the problem with that?
It was a Netflix movie.
Okay.
Never went to the cinema.
No,
did not.
No. I think that's a pretty easy. That's an easy demarcation. I think if it's at the films, it can be in. If it's on telly, it can't. It can be in the Emmys.
It's not made for broadcast TV. I mean,
okay.
So it's a problematic space.
I swing an axe with a broad blade. I don't like all this finessing around here.
Yeah,
okay. If you make a film and it's at the movies, you can have an Academy Award.
Well, good for you, Johnny Appleseed.
An American Spirit of Peace and Independence, or a Golden Globe, or whatever the other ones are. If it's on telly, you get a different one.
Yeah,
get an MTV Award. Little astronaut with a flag. That's a good looking award. Better than an AFI award.
Yeah. All right. Well, anyway.
That's good.
That's good. The 10.
That's the 10.
You happy with that list?
Sure, I'm happy with that list.
Okay. All right. Now.
Yeah.
Here's where it got really interesting. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
People got to nominate their outliers. Okay.
What does that mean?
The ones that didn't make that top 10 list, but they particularly fancied. Okay. So we got another 10 out of that.
Okay.
Very quickly. Jake Wilson. Loved Clint Eastwood's The 1517 to Paris. Now that is
I didn't even know about this film.
Ah, really?
Is that based on the 1518 to Marseille?
No.
Okay. I have a novel.
It's based on the true story of three American guys who are on a train where there was a hijack by terrorists.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
and they basically intervened and saved a bunch of people, right? They were heroes, real life heroes.
American heroes.
He got the real guys to play themselves in this film. Uh-huh. So it's kind of like a docudrama recreation.
Yep.
It was eviscerated by critics. Mm-hmm. It was dumped by the distributor. It got nothing. Mm-hmm. Got nothing.
Except Jake Wilson.
But Jake loved it.
Okay.
So there you go. And this is the bit of this list kind of thing that I really like, because you get into this territory where suddenly people have got their hobby horses and the averaging business has no effect.
No,
it's not about
the averaging. Exactly.
Suddenly it's about people going, I really want this one on the list. Mm-hmm. So Gary Maddox, big rap for Black Panther. Okay. Now, I don't know how you feel about Black Panther or if you saw Black Panther.
I have no feelings about Black Panther. I don't like feelings.
You could have stopped at feelings.
I don't like talking about feelings. I don't like sharing feelings. And so where Black Panther's concerned, you're not going to hear anything about feelings.
Sandra Hall loved Breath, Simon Baker's film based on the Tim Winton novel, Surfing.
No, and yeah. I would never.
I didn't see it. So
I don't read Tim Winton books, so I'm not going to see Tim Winton films.
Craig Matheson loved Can You Ever Forgive Me? Now, that's a film that's on in the cinemas at the moment with Richard E. Grant and Melissa McCarthy playing the...
That's right.
Novelist-turned-forger, Lee Israel.
A story like this. Yeah. I love a story of deception, of fraud, because everybody has been a victim of fraud of some kind at some point in their lives, and everybody can relate to that.
Yeah.
And I love that they keep making films. You know, we were talking about a TV series a while back where there was this long con, and they've got into the second season.
Oh,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And everybody...
It's called Imposters.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody completely is either on... They find themselves with one side or another. Everyone can find a place to be in a story like that. And this sounds... I mean, Melissa McCarthy's a very interesting actor.
Yeah.
Richard E. Grant... Sadly, I think has never really quite found his métier after With Nail and I.
I've got to say, the character he plays in this, I interviewed him and I put it to him that this could be With Nail 30 years down the track, and he totally agreed.
Look, that's nice, because I really like him, and if he's in something, oh, great, and it's always a bit...
I think you like him in this.
Henry and June is an example for you. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go watch Henry and June and see Richard E. Grant and think, oh...
I think you'll dig him in this.
Yeah, because good, it's good. Sort of,
I mean, I hear exactly what you're saying, and I, to a significant degree, am on board with that. But I kind of think this is right in his sweet spot.
Good.
Absolutely in
his
sweet spot.
Great.
And Melissa McCarthy is doing something that you've never seen her do before.
Which is good, because I don't like what she normally does.
Right.
I like her, but the stuff she does and the films she makes, they just have no interest to me whatsoever.
You should go and see this one. I reckon you'll dig it. Okay. Now, Paul Burns loved Darkest Hour.
I wouldn't.
The Churchill movie.
Yeah, one of two, I think, that came out this year. Yeah, Paul Burns. Now, what was his relationship with the Sydney Film Festival?
He was the director of the Sydney Film Festival, wasn't he?
Yeah. When was that?
Oh.
The 80s, maybe.
I'm not sure how far back, but
yeah, quite a bit. Okay,
He knows his stuff. Paul's a terrific writer.
I'm not saying,
I think he's wrong on this one.
On the Darkest Hour. Now, which age was it? Albert Finney? Was it Gary Oldman?
Gary Oldman. He won the Oscar for Best Actor.
He won the Oscar for Best Actor for being Winston Churchill. Another hagiograph.
It's one of those transformative roles, and I think, in the same space, I think Christian Bale is going to be in the running next year for Vice, playing Dick Cheney. So, anyway, it's not a film that I loved. Far too wordy. The most implausible scene I've ever seen in a movie, I think, about a real historical figure in that Churchill getting on the underground and sitting there and asking the opinions of the average man on the underground.
Yeah, it would have been...
It was just terrible.
Yeah.
Anyway. Right. Now.
Yes.
Another film about an historical figure, and this one, I think, much more to my liking, possibly more to yours. The Death of Stalin.
The Death of Stalin.
Yep. Quite a few people
liked that?
Well, Sandra Hall liked that. A lot of people
rated
it, but it was just sort of sitting outside their list. So,
Yeah.
I mean, you can only nominate 10.
No.
And I've got to say, when I started on this exercise, I looked at... I went.
You call this exercise?
I was sweating by the end of it. It's a workout.
Here comes a man in his jungle greens, fresh from the hills of Malaya. He talks about exercise.
Somebody's got to defend the Raj. I thought at the outset, it was a pretty lousy year in film. I was going, where were the films that sort of like stand out in my memory? And of course, every time I do this, I have to actually, I go to this database that records all the films that were released
handy.
Over the year. And
very handy.
You go, oh my God, there are like so many films. I've forgotten that was released.
There were a lot of good films this year.
There are a lot of good films most years.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of dross. And given that there are, around 700 films released in the year, I see maybe somewhere between 100 and 150, plus the ones I see at festivals. So maybe I might see, say, 180 films a year, which is not a bad effort, but it still leaves a lot of films that I'm not seeing.
Yeah.
And then you kind of forget what you saw when.
Yes, of course.
And it's only when
you
put this list together and you go, there were actually some cracking films.
There were.
Yeah. So anyway, there you go. one that came out very early in the year, and this one got quite a bit of support as well, was I, Tonya. Did you ever see it?
Yeah, I did. I saw I, Tonya. I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
Yeah.
Like an angry babysitter, as David Sedaris said. That was a wonderful film, and I like the story. I'm not usually that interested in the story behind how films get made and the financing and all of that malarkey, but very interesting how it got put up and how it got made, and a great example of how something doesn't have to be made by a massive corporation with hundreds of millions of dollars and lots of executives and lots of tiers of responsibility, and out comes something great. You know, that old saw about nobody ever built a statue to a committee, though. The Burgers of Calais, there is a statue of them. It's seven, so you may say that's not true. But no one ever built a statue. Well, okay, that's, you know, having just one or two people getting together and making something happen can result in really good art. And I think I, Tonya is only in questions of taste interpretation could you fault it, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's as a piece of work, it's fantastic.
It's a really, I think, bold, innovative, funny, shocking kind of piece of work. Yeah. Directed by an Australian, Craig Gillespie, and starring, of course, Margot Robbie. And it was really the film that sort of, I think, put her on the radar in terms of she's a producer.
Yeah.
You know, she's not just, you know,
well, you can't be anymore. An actor.
Well, a lot of people are
but if you want some longevity in your career, especially if you're a woman and you want to exert some kind of influence over what happens and get a bit of cash, you know, generated through the regular screenings, and that's...
Well, I think it's also a really interesting move in terms of her being, I mean, you know, nobody's in any doubt about the fact that she's gorgeous and she can, you know, she can open a film as a glamour
figure. Okay, well, I wouldn't know.
To a degree.
Okay, I don't know who the glamorous ones are. Apparently I've got Jennifer Stone mixed with Sarah Lawrence or somebody...
Okay, pair of fantastic dancers. And I think what it did is it said, look beyond that. You know, there's a lot more going on here. Here's somebody who can actually initiate a project and bring it to fulfillment.
Let's not forget Ida Lupino.
Director.
So it's not a precedent by any means, but it's great to see, of course.
And this is one that I think is a very interesting selection. This is from Stephanie Bunbury. Isle of Dogs, the Wes Anderson.
That was interesting, Isle of Dogs. There were things about it, like the caper and the story was okay, but yeah, it was an interesting film in many ways for what it brought up in terms of how things are interpreted and how things are.
You sound like you have concerns, but was it about the representation of Japanese culture? Which was obviously where a lot of people focus their dislike, or was it more broadly about the story? Or
I think it was both, and I think it was also the fact that it would have been a great opportunity to make a film, an animated film, especially Wes Anderson, because he could have done this. He could have actually made this film with none of his famous mates, with all subtitles. I thought, you like the Studio Ghibli, right?
Yeah.
Ghibli. I say Ghibli. I don't know if it's right.
I think it's Ghibli.
Between
us, it's Ghibli.
Okay,
right.
So I like their stuff. I'm no like great devotee or anything, but I like a lot of their stuff, and I only like watching it. And I am a snob, but this isn't why. I only like watching it when it's the Japanese language and the subtitles.
Yeah.
And that gives, obviously, authentic, but as well, you're not being distracted by bloody Gwyneth Paltrow or some other...
Yeah.
You know, American. And I felt that is very distracting. Everyone's trying to pick, oh, where's Tom Waits or where's Jason Schwartzman or where's whoever the other, Bill Murray. You know, it's really problematic, and it's a bold thing to say, I'm going to make a film, a Japanese film. I'm an American guy and I'm going to make a Japanese film. It's quite courageous in a way, and it kind of falls between two posts for me. That film, but there you go.
I think there's a lot to like in it, but I think
the animation, I like looking at it.
I think the
it looks
criticisms,
great.
Particularly around the use of you know, English language actors, not so much the famous aspect of it, just the fact that they're, you know, why not do it in Japanese?
Exactly.
Yeah, and I think that's a valid criticism. I didn't I didn't have the same kind of issues. I'm not Japanese, so what right do I have to have issues or not have issues? But I didn't have the same concerns around the sort of the notion of appropriation of Japanese culture, because I kind of felt like it was all done with such affection and with kind of knowledge of it. And yes, it's inherently through Western eyes, and it's not it's not from within. But I don't think that's inherently a problem. I mean,
no.
You know, Kurosawa was appropriating the Western to make his samurai.
No, I don't think that's a problem at all. No.
Yeah. Anyway, rattling along.
Yes.
A Quiet Place. Oh, come on. You're giving me that puzzled look, like, what the hell is A Quiet Place?
Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, you don't?
What's A Quiet Place?
Emily Blunt and husband John Krasinski from The Office. From the American version of The Office.
She married to him?
Yes.
Why?
Yeah, because she didn't have your number. Anyway, he directed this. And it's I guess you call it like a sort of a horror film, a horror suspense thriller.
Yeah.
About a family trying to survive in a world in which there's some kind of alien species.
And you can't make a sound?
That's right.
Yeah.
It feeds on noise. It detects its prey through noise, right? Yep. So they have to be quiet all the way through.
Mm.
And in the sort of the most, I guess, the most tense and gripping and ridiculous scene in the film, she gives birth. So she delivers a baby.
In silence.
While trying to maintain silence.
Maybe in silence.
So
if you do your calm birthing technique, then it can be done. Mm. You know, if you do the various regimes, it is completely possible to have a baby in silence and have that baby be silent as well.
This film was a hit, and it was a very
It was
a low budget film, you know, genre film that made a lot of money and almost certainly will spawn a sequel. You'd have to think. I won't say how or what that might look like, but
because you know, and you don't want to spoil it for everybody.
No, I don't know that there's one coming, but I don't want to say what it would look like because of how this one ends.
Oh, okay, okay.
Then I think, you know, you're better off not knowing.
Everybody dies. It's very sad. Everybody dies.
I may have ruined it for everybody, haven't you?
Yep. I don't mind. There's all these other films that are going to come. I'll see them instead. It's not like there's going to be a shortage of films to see. Oh, damn, I didn't see A Quiet Place.
And then,
but I have seen A Summer Place.
And then my contribution to this spillover list was Sorry to Bother You.
Okay.
Now, is that the film you were saying that is not going to be on for long and still is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Have you seen it?
No.
Ah, right.
Well,
you better hurry up because it won't be on for long.
If I could afford domestic staff, I would see more films than I do, and I can't. So there it is. So I don't see as many films as the people who have domestic staff to look after their offspring. And that's fine. I don't mind. I don't complain about it. It's just part of my life. It's how my life is. Did have someone, but they moved overseas. So that's no good.
Oh, dear. You do go on, don't you? You really do go
that's
on.
That's funny. I reckon when people listen to this podcast, they'll notice an absence of Andrew Young.
That's probably true, actually. And they'll go,
God, where's he gone?
Where's he gone?
He's disappeared. I might have to listen to some true crime instead.
Be careful, there could be a murder happening live on.
I reckon we should wrap up the wrap up.
Yeah,
what
I
do you think?
Enough. Yep, I'm done.
Let's wrap up the wrap up of
2018. Yep. That's it. I'm just going to say one more that didn't make the list that I would throw in is Cold War.
Okay.
Pavel Pavlikovsky's black and white.
I've just seen pictures of that, and it's a lot of people hugging each other, and I don't. Doesn't look interesting to me at all.
It's a doomed romance story. Yeah. It has such great music. Really great music.
You know, with music, right?
You can put on record.
Yeah.
Is that what you're going
to
say?
Yeah, I am. You don't have to watch people hugging.
You save your $22 plus what you're spending on the domestic
help.
That's
right. You spend like $300 or something at the movies, don't you? I try to spend a little less. That's it for this episode of The Clappers for 2018. If you're lucky, you may get another one. So, you know, stay close to whatever it is you stay close to keep informed about what's happening in the world by myself and Carl Quinn.
And I hope that little rap gives you some sort of pointers towards your summer viewing catch-up if you get the opportunity. And maybe you need to go out and get domestic help, but probably not.
Well said.